Folks, sprouted seeds, or sprouts as we like to call them, are truly the freshest foods because they are, well, still living. As living foods, sprouts are among the most nutritious and digestible of foods. But sprouts are also feared by the food safety police, as witnessed by the recent contamination in Germany that sickened thousands. That the most nutritious of foods can also be the most dangerous of foods leads us to ask, are living foods safe to eat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 740th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Frankfurt or tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James back at the studio. Hello, Nikki.
Hey, Michael. How's it going out there?
Very good. Folks, today we're broadcasting live from the Monterey Bay Certified Farmers Markets, one of the best, 10 best farmers markets in the United States, is voted by that by Sunset Magazine. So we're really happy to be out here today. And today we're going to be talking about sprouts. Because every time I come to the farmer's market, this is what I hear. I have to get my sprouts. So here to tell us why we have to get the sprouts is my lovely bride, Marlene. Marlene, why do we have to get the sprouts every time we come to the farmer's market?
Good morning, Michael, and good morning, Santa Cruz and the Monterey Bay Area.
And the rest of the world.
And the rest of the world, too. I have to get my sprouts because I believe it is one of the healthiest, most nutritious foods that you can possibly consume. And I also find it to be the easiest in terms of fresh, raw food. And I can use them on everything. I can eat them just as they are, or I can put them on top of eggs or inside of a sandwich or on top of pasta. I mean, there's just unlimited uses of sprouts, and they're so good for you.
Do they make you happy when you eat them?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Marlene. You know, folks, ounce for ounce, sprouted seeds contain more nutrients than any other natural food. Why is that? Well, the concentrated nutrients stored in seeds are carbohydrates, fats, proteins, and vitamins are transformed and increased 50 to 400% through sprouting. In addition, sprouting pre-digests the nutrients, making it easier for our bodies to assimilate them. Sprouts truly are nature's superfood. However, seeds are sprouted in warm air and water, which also provide the perfect conditions for sprouting whatever else happens to be contained on the seeds. Thus, sprouts can also be a troublesome food, as witnessed by the recent outbreak in Germany of E. coli that sickened thousands. Now, this outbreak, folks, was traced to contaminated seeds imported from all places, Egypt. There have been an estimated 40 sprout contaminations throughout Canada, Europe, and the U.S. during the past 20 years, and the food safety police at the FDA consider them to be high-risk foods. And yet, what I hear every time I come to the farmer's market is, we have to get some sprouts. We just have to. And so today we ask, can living foods be safe foods? Here to help us find an answer, we have Ken Kimes, who is the proprietor, along with Sandra Ward, of the New Natives Farm. Ken, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, Michael. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about the New Natives. What do you mean by New Natives, anyway? I always wanted to ask you that.
Well, it's a name that we came up probably 30 years ago, and it just popped into our brains, and we thought it was a good one. We ran a little poll among some friends, and they said, yeah, go for that.
That's the one they use. So 30 years as a New Natives farmer, then. Sprouts and mushrooms, right?
Sprouts and mushrooms. We actually sell the mushrooms for another farm.
Okay.
But we grow all the sprouts ourselves in our greenhouse right here in Aptos.
Okay. And why did you decide to do sprouts? I mean, where did that come from? Like Marlene, were you crazy about them as well?
Well, I always thought sprouts were a good thing, but I didn't actually ever think I'd be a sprout grower until I moved to Santa Cruz, which is sort of the quintessential sprout place. Yep, good demographic for that. And there was,
I mean, if you were like in Winnemucca, Nevada, you would probably have a tough time getting by in the world growing sprouts, right?
Poker chips. No, it's just a really, well, first of all, it's a really good climate, and there's people here to support us and doing this. And we came to Santa Cruz, and there was a little sprout business for sale. run by Rainbow and Windspring, of course, in 1979.
Okay.
And so we kind of took over that business and got going with that. And the community here really supported us, and they also support organic in a big way. So, you know, the rest is history.
The rest is history. And you sell through farmers markets and local stores.
We sell at 9 farmers markets a week. We
wow.
also sell directly to the retail stores, and we'll sell to wholesale also.
So a lot of them then.
Yeah.
A lot of different outlets.
Yeah.
And what kinds of sprouts do you have going? And there, you can sprout anything, right?
Well, our mainstay has always been wheatgrass, but we also do sunflower greens and pea shoots, and we do a whole line of microgreens like arugula, broccoli, a mix of tatsoi mizuna, different sprouts like that, cilantro.
What is a microgreen?
Well, it's just a very young plant. It's a little bit past the what you might think of as the classic sprout stage, and more into, you know, just the young, really, really young green stage.
So it's an actual plant then?
Yeah, it's an actual plant. It's basically just before the true leaf comes on. It's generally cotyledons and so forth before
okay.
you get the true leaves popping out.
So there's a lot of thank you, Bert. Somebody just one of my favorite people just came by and gave us some Cafe de la Esperanza premium Nicaraguan coffee. Oh my goodness, this is going to be fun. Well, by the time we get out of here, we'll be flying high. Yes. So is there a difference in the nutritional value of these microgreens and regular sprouts then?
Yeah, I think the best illustrative example of that, although the research is not complete on sprouts by any measure, is broccoli. And you know, broccoli itself as a plant, and as you find it in the store with the broccoli tops, florets, is strongly anti-cancer. And that mm-hmm. material that's in there, the compound that is strongly anti-cancer, is really concentrated the younger and younger it gets. So just sprouted broccoli has a really strong a component of that anti-cancer agent, and it weakens as you get into the more mature plant.
Let's talk about the nutritional value of sprouts as we go along here. Seeds are kind of like packages of nutrients. They have the carbohydrates, they have the mm-hmm. oil, essential oils, they have the proteins, they have the vitamins, they have everything necessary for life.
Yes, they do. And generally, you'll find that they have you see a lot of conversion going on as the germination process starts up. So you'll have the simple fats will be turned into sugars and amino acids, and things just start moving along into enzymes. In other words, all that stored energy there is then converted into life-giving material to get that young plant going, because it's basically going to work off the material that's stored in that seed for the first week, maybe longer, until it can get a root down in the soil and start to pick up nutrition from the soil. That goes away, let's say, 2 or 3 weeks into the process, but in that first week or so, you've got all that stored energy in that seed.
It's coming to life energy.
Yeah, then. Lots of enzymes, lots of amino acids, lots of good things.
Well, I've seen written where the amount of nutrition is increased by 50 to 400%.
No, that's right. Vitamin, like a wheat seed is sprouted, I think in a week the vitamin E content goes up 400 times or something like
400
that.
400 times?
Yeah, it's just a factory of nutrition. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's trying to get that plant going. It's a factory of nutrition, and it's interesting that then humans can take advantage of that nutrition because it's very available at that point.
Now, the other thing I hear about it is that the nutrients are pre-digested, or the sprouting process pre-digest the food then?
They're basically in the cell membrane. They're in the cell fluid. And so in that case, they're in more or less an ionic form, which is really easy for you to digest. You don't have to work through a lot of cellulose or other material in your digestion process to get to
everything's
that.
Right there, ready.
Sure.
Boom.
No, yeah, it's good stuff.
So these sprouts really are nature's superfood then, aren't they?
They are, and you look back through history, and cultures all over the world have eaten sprouts. I mean, imagine the way they got going with somebody's grain storage got wet, and they decided they better eat it up, and they discovered they felt really good. So, yeah, let's see, you know, Chinese mung bean sprouts and things like mm-hmm. that. They've just been around forever. People have tuned into sprouts for a long
time. So this isn't something new.
No, and interesting, too, you use sprouts to make beer and whiskey and
right,
all kinds
right.
of things, you know. They're a big part of the beginning process for a lot of things.
Okay. So the notion that we're working with sprouts here isn't something that's brand new. We've been doing it for a long time, and yet... Here it is, the subject of these massive recalls and the focus of those, and that's what we're going to be talking about today as we work our way into this radio program. So describe your production facility. How do you sprouts?
Well, we grow all in soil, so we're growing basically
oh, really?
A young plant. That's right. And because of the emphasis that was brought to sprouts, and they ended up on the dangerous food list, we actually stopped growing the sprouts that are grown solely in water, such as alfalfa, clover, and mung bean sprouts. And the reason is because if you grow those sprouts, you basically have a big target on your chest.
Okay, we're going to have to hold out. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Ken Kimes. We're talking about nature's superfood, sprouts, and how they get in trouble, and what we can do about saving them because they are the perfect food for us. Do stay tuned. We will be right back. This is The Food Chain.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back out there. This is Michael Olson and the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're coming to you live from the Certified Farmers Markets of the Monterey Bay Area here in Aptos, California. One of the 10 best in the United States, as voted by Sunset Magazine, who generally tend to know what they're talking about, at least sometimes. And it's my home farmers markets where I hang out after doing the Food Chain Radio shows on many occasions. And that's why we're here today talking with Ken Kimes. And we're talking about the real life superfoods, the sprouts, the foods that have the most life and nutrition and goodness in them. And how it is that some of the best foods for us are some of also the dangerous foods because they do have life in them. And as a consequence of that life, some of it is not so good, and sometimes we get sick. And so what is happening to these real live superfoods, the raw milks, the sprouts, the vegetables, it all seems to be becoming the subject of the food police. And the question is, will we be able to enjoy these foods in the future as the food police become more and more and more pervasive in our lives? That's what the subject is today. Ken Kimes. Ken, we're just talking about how you no longer grow alfalfa sprouts. Why is that now?
Well, we don't grow alfalfa, clover, mung beans. They're grown in an entirely different manner, which is that they're grown hydroponically in large drums, generally a very controlled temperature and 100% humidity. So it's a little bit of the perfect environment to
perfect
grow.
Perfect environment for growing anything, right?
Yeah,
anything
right.
sprouts, yeah.
That's right. And when the FDA came on the scene, we used to grow those, and we grew them actually in a whole different manner, which was we grew them in the greenhouse in trays, and we irrigated them with the water that we have there. And so our method of growing actually produced a real green sprout because it got a lot of sunlight. We didn't use artificial lights, and we weren't inside with it. We also had a lot of air circulation. So there was a fellow who came
along. Which sounds
along.
To me like the perfect sprout. I don't know.
It was a very good sprout. It was a very, very good sprout. And there was a food safety consultant that came along to help us out. He tested our sprouts and couldn't come up with enough bacteria to actually employ any intervention methods to try and get a control in a variable group. He was dumbfounded by that. But I think it was our growing method as well.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, the sprout growers themselves are not producing. I mean, we really need to emphasize this. The sprout growers themselves are not contaminating the sprouts.
Right.
It's the seed is coming in contaminated from the field.
Well, you know, this sprout incident in Germany was traced to seeds coming in from Egypt. Now, I've been to Egypt, and I know what... I mean, if you're a Westerner, you go there, you don't eat raw foods of any kind. You eat only cooked foods because our bodies are not tuned into, you know, fighting off those kinds of bugs. And yet they import those seeds from Egypt to Germany and sprout them, and there you go.
Sure. Well, just think about microbial life, especially bacterial life, where you can produce... What, 100,000 bacteria out of one in about 5 minutes?
5 minutes, yeah. Boom.
And the mutations are thrown off constantly, and they're constantly genetically responding to assault. So anything you throw at bacteria, it's working its way around as fast as it can. So put all that together, and then you throw in the piece of sprouts coming out of a field of seeds, and let's say, which I think is true in the case of alfalfa and clover, that field is grazed by animals, or it's part of a dairy operation or something like that.
Or they're irrigating with the Nile.
Yeah, something like that.
There you go.
And bacteria around the world, you know, because of the assault that we're constantly making, are getting stronger. So essentially, the sprout seed becomes this vehicle that moves the bacteria from one part of the world to another part.
Right.
Because most of the sprout seed in America, or a big portion anyway, is sourced from other countries.
Oh.
The mung beans are all basically grown in China. I'm not knocking anybody, any particular country. I'm just saying that there's different mixes of bacteria in these different places, just like you wouldn't eat raw food necessarily in Egypt or some other part of the world, just because your interior is not set
up
for it.
We're not tuned into those bugs. Huh?
So if we import those bugs and then we... grow them, then we have an issue.
Then we have an issue there. So where do you get your seeds?
Our seeds come from Nebraska. We work with a farmer, an organic farmer there in Nebraska we've worked with for a long, long time, about 25 years, and constantly working back and forth with him to come up with varieties that really work for us.
So then you're really tuned in to the whole entire process. You're not just sourcing seeds from a seed broker who's buying them from another seed broker who's getting them from another seed broker who's getting them from who knows
well,
where in the world.
It's not like we can buy every seed from Nebraska, so we do end up with some seed brokers.
Mm-hmm.
But we work with seed brokers who give us a certified organic seed, and organic seed has never been implicated.
That's right. That's right.
You know, you'd have to think hard into that as to why. I have some speculation, but I can't say for sure. But they also do a real robust regime of testing the seed for human pathogens before they sell it. This particular company, and none of their seed has ever been involved in an outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tough regime of testing they do. Gives them a 99.9% satisfaction that they're not passing on.
So you've been doing this for 30 years and selling directly to customers. I would think that there would be, you would have a lot of incentive to have clean food, because if you were to sell bad sprouts to my wife...
Oh, listen, there, you know, 10 years or so ago when sprouts came on the FDA radar, there was 45 sprouters in California. And within, I'd say, so the FDA got together with the California Department of Health, and they did a survey, a quote survey of sprout growers in California, which was really actually an inspection. And within 30 days, we probably lost 30% of those growers, about 15 of the growers. And in another couple of years, we lost another 15. We're probably down to 10 sprouters in California at this point, all because of that attention from the authorities, so to speak.
So it really wasn't because anybody was getting sick.
Well, there were some illnesses traced to sprouts, and that came on the radar, but not in all cases, no. A lot of it, it's okay. Each one of those situations was individual, but some of it just came back to the stress of being under that kind of scrutiny. People also didn't want to deal with the amount of chlorine that the FDA called for in their guidance, which is why we stopped growing alfalfa and clover, because the sprout guidance that came down from the FDA called for extreme amounts of chlorine use. So each one, and then there was another sprout grower that was doing everything by the book, chlorine and everything else, sent their sprouts off to a lab. They got a positive. Their HACCP plan called for a complete recall. I don't know of any small producer that does a recall that can come back into business. You just don't have the resources to do that. If you're a large producer, you can do a recall, you can come back into business, but small producers generally go out of business at that point. So, you know, it's a tough world to live in.
And it's... So have you ever had any trouble?
No, we never
have. In 30 years?
No, we haven't. At least not that's come to our attention, and we're very tuned into that.
Well, I would think if you did have troubles, it would come to your attention really quickly because you sell directly to people.
Oh, yeah, and the farmer's market is great for feedback.
Yeah.
Somebody come back and say, well, these things made me sick. Our ears are going to perk up.
Really quickly.
Yeah.
But if you're selling to somebody else and who knows where, you lose that closeness. Now, when I put out the notice that I was going to do a show on sprouts, I got a real interesting email from a truck driver in the Midwest. Who said that, I've been on the road selling sprouts all for years and years and years. So what he has is that he's sprouting in his truck.
Wow, great. Good for him.
And he has a couple of great big jugs, and he's doing sprouts inside of his truck and selling them to other truck drivers at truck stops.
Oh, that's great.
and it's a wonderful story, and... But he hasn't had any trouble.
No, I know. I mean, it's... Oh, boy. This is a whole thing of what's really going on here.
And that's what we're going to pick up when we come back from this break. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. This is a beautiful Saturday, and we're talking about food safety and sprouts with Ken Kimes of New Natives Nursery and you. Do stay tuned. We will be right back. Hey, we're back. Michael Olson here with Ken Kimes on the Food Chain radio program. We're talking about real living foods that have lots of nutrition and lots of life in them, and yet how the living foods are the dangerous foods because they can also harbor other things that our bodies are not quite attuned to, and so we get sick. And so what happens with this contradiction, you know, the best foods are the dangerous foods. So what are we going to do about this? Are we going to protect ourselves out of the business of eating real foods? And that's really the question on the table today as we discuss sprouts and raw milk and all the other great foods that are being put upon by the Food Safety Police of the United States of America and other countries as well. We're talking about a truck driver that is growing sprouts in the back of his truck as he drives around America. And I got an email from him in the Midwest. It was a wonderful story, and talked about how he's got a couple big jugs in his truck, and he sells sprouts to his fellow truck drivers at various truck stops that he stops at, and kind of like a regular truck farmer, I guess. He's a real live truck farmer. And a farmer's market wherever he goes because he sells these sprouts to his fellow truck drivers. Now, how is he getting away with this, Ken Kimes? This is pretty good.
Well, I don't know that he's getting away with anything. I think he's just exercising his option to grow his own food, basically.
Right, right.
And he happens to be doing it in a truck, which is the great thing about sprouts. Like I was telling you during the break, we set people up occasionally who are sailing around the world and want to have some fresh green food on their sailboat. Or let's say they're living in an apartment and maybe they're in one of those urban food deserts that we talk about where there's no good fresh food around. Well, right there on your sink, you can sprout some seeds and end up with a nice green, fresh, highly nutritious, fresh live food.
That you can use to put with all of the dead food put some life into your... And yet, what we see happening because of the occasional food contamination outbreaks that we see a Food and Drug Administration that's now conducting SWAT raids on small farmers around the country. What the heck is going on here?
Well, that's a really good question.
Just a couple weeks ago, we had a large SWAT raid in Los Angeles on a couple gals who were selling raw milk to their friends.
Yeah, the raw milk issue.
Raw milk is kind of like sprouts.
Well, it is, and it's one of those things that's on the dangerous food list.
Yeah.
There's a whole list of things on the dangerous food list, and I think they keep adding to it all the time.
And they're all
basically highly nutritious foods.
Highly nutritious foods, okay.
And it's
all the good stuff is the dangerous stuff.
It's ironic and too bad, but I think part of the problem is that we are, you know, breeding up a set of bugs, you know, that are especially virulent.
And how are we doing that?
I think antibiotics, overuse of antibiotics, and just, you know, microbes mutate rapidly. But also, when we have an outbreak and we trace it back to, let's say, spinach or strawberries or whatever, we generally always, the research stops at that point. So there was a situation just a few weeks ago in Oregon around strawberries where 0157 made some people sick, and I think someone died. Okay, well, they went into the field and they took some tests, and they tested some deer feces that was around the field, and they came up with 0157, and then they kind of just stopped the research there, as far as I know. I haven't heard anything else. Well, where did those deer acquire 0157?
Exactly.
You know, that's not something that deer breed up in their guts that we know of. If they do, then we've got a pretty interesting situation.
Then we have a real interesting
situation. So we really need to get to the bottom of this, not just stop at the point where we go, oh, that spinach grower or that strawberry grower or that sprout grower is the problem. We need to start finding out about what's happening with this bacteria. Is it becoming more virulent? Are we just gathering data, you know, in a more concise and precise manner? Are we freaking out about illnesses? I mean, what is
going on? Well, you know, that's the other side of this equation, too, is that as we seek to become ever cleaner in our world and get rid of the foods that have bacteria on them, and our bodies become less accustomed to dealing with bacteria, you know, the people who live in Cairo can eat the food.
Yeah.
But if I go to Cairo and eat the food, I get sick.
Well, yeah, I mean, they say, I was reading a little thing once, and I think it was appropriate. Probably the person with the most robust immune system in the world is a woman in South Africa with three or four kids living in one of the ghettos, I might say,
or the
barrios or whatever. You know, she's got to have an immune system that just won't quit. I mean, she can defeat anything.
Yeah.
And that's part of where you get an immune system is
by facing up to the fact that you eat a bad bug once in a while.
Yeah, and you get a little sick, and that's how you develop an immune system in the first place. So if we end up with completely sterile food, we're going to have to put ourselves in a
sterile
plastic
food
bubble.
And a completely sterile environment.
Yeah.
And so the question then becomes, if that's the case, what happens to our body? What happens to our mind if we can't stand up to anything anymore?
I don't know. Their life has risk, and I can tell you that for sure.
Okay. Okay, so then we're back to the fact that you're producing real live foods. You're producing one of the dangerous foods. You know, you're on the FDA's most wanted list for figuring out how to deal with Ken Kimes here. And so let's talk about a little bit about, you know, these food safety raids. As a producer, what does that mean to you? What happened when the cat went into your greenhouse? Anyway?
Oh, well, that's a funny story, but it's more anecdotal than anything. We had a food safety consultant that was working with us when the whole FDA thing came down. And we were trying to understand how you do food safety on a farm. And hardly anybody knew how to do it. That was over a decade ago. So we had a cat that lived around the greenhouse and around the farm, and we actually listed her on our CCOF, our organic cert, as part of our abatement program.
Sure.
She was there.
This is how we get rid of rats, right?
That's right. And so he walks through, sees the cat, points at her, and says, "I want that cat out of here." You know, he's the food safety consultant. He's the one we got to pay attention to. Well, sadly enough, the cat, we couldn't figure out what to do with her. She wasn't going to be accepted with the other cats in the house. The poor thing got sick and died in about 3 weeks. We thought, oh my God, this guy really does have power. So
there it is.
Yes, that was a fun, that was an ironic story.
So, you know, as you go through this whole process of trying to comply with the government's food safety mandates, how do you deal with that?
Well,
I mean, as a small producer, you lack the economies of scale to be able to hire attorneys and chemists and and everything else. So
no, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. We don't have the kind of resources on staff, so to speak. I am the food safety guy. I'm also the accountant.
You're also the farmer. I'm trying
to do everything around there. And a food safety program has a lot of rigor attached to it in terms of writing things down. It's got a ton of paperwork to it and paying attention. And then you come along and your buyers want to see a third-party food safety audit. And then on top of that, you'll have the regulatory inspections will show up. So it's a really hard thing to get done on a small farm. Really difficult. I can't stress that enough. The resources required are immense. They did a little study around the food, the leafy green marketing agreement. They think it's something like $26,000 per farm increased cost to run even just the most rudimentary food safety program.
$26,000 just to ante up.
Yeah, just to get over that bar.
Wow, folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about real live foods, and will we be able to eat real live foods when the food safety police have their way with all the small farms in America? Will farmers' markets be able to survive? Because actually, that's what we have here is real live fresh foods, and all real live fresh foods have risk. Can we live up to that risk, or must we get rid of all of the risk and thus get rid of all of our real live foods? I guess when it comes down to it, the only safe food is dead food. Yuck! Right back. Do stay tuned. Hey, welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Ken, Michael Olson here with Ken Kimes. Ken, what did you say about farmers markets?
I think I know, I always qualify these things, I think I know that farmers markets are selling about $1 billion worth of produce every year in America. And that's quite a growth, and that's quite a chunk out of the fresh food market.
And the dangerous thing, I think, with respect to farmers markets, with respect to conventional food chain, is that it's the fresh food, too, that you can get at the farmers markets. And the most dangerous thing of all, of course, is fresh raw milk. Because if people start buying fresh raw milk at farmers markets, then what reason is there to go to the big grocery outlets? And then that's the threat. So there is this threat to big ag, big food, dead food, and posed by the people at the farmers markets who are growing real fresh stuff. And so what do we do when there's this giant threat? Well, we start regulating things. We use these food safety contaminations as opportunities to bring new laws of food safety to the country. So I have some quotes here from the food safety people at... incidentally, you know who the food safeties are for the United States of America is?
It's somebody...
Michael Taylor.
Michael Taylor, right.
Michael Taylor was the hired gun Monsanto used to get genetically engineered foods through the Food and Drug Administration with no safety efficacy studies.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the person that is now watching out for food safety in the United States. So I have some quotes here from the Food and Drug Administration. I'd like you to comment on them. Quote number one, you have no absolute right to consume or feed children any particular food.
That's an interesting intrusion into your life, isn't it? You thought you had a certain dominion over your home, didn't you?
Here's another one. There is no deeply rooted historical tradition of granting you unfettered access to foods of all kinds.
There's no tradition? That's a really amazing thing to say.
And here's the third one. It keeps getting better. You do not have a fundamental right to obtain any food you wish.
Wow. Well,
so the
folks, this is why we need to secede from the union.
Well, I guess this is what we're talking about today, the threat real food poses to people who want to control what we eat.
Yeah.
And I think that this is what frightens me more than anything, is that that we as a people are allowing our governments and our powers that be, which includes the government and it includes the financial interests that influence the government, into using these food safety crises to control what we eat. And from these quotes, you have no absolute right to consume or feed children any particular food. This is...
That is an amazing thing to say, especially if they're your children. I don't think of it. It seems like common law comes into... It seems like the Magna Carta was designed around this very kind of very issue, right? I mean, come on.
So I guess my question always comes down to the bottom line is this food safety or is this really a restraint of trade that we're working on here?
Well, I think it's working on a lot of levels. Believe me, I will never minimize anyone's illness or death caused by bacterial infection that they might have gotten from a food. You can't do that. That's very serious and it's devastating to a person or a family, loved ones, and everything else. But that's not to say, as we find in all cases politically, that fear doesn't drive legislation, doesn't drive regulation, doesn't drive a whole bunch of things forward that, you know, other people latch onto and use to advance their own personal agendas or their agendas that they see that work for them. So, yeah, we're in an environment right now where there are a lot of agendas working around food safety. And now we find through the new Food Safety Modernization Act that the FDA has been given jurisdiction over all farms, basically to tell you how to, or the safe way to grow, harvest, handle, pack fresh produce. And it includes basically all farms in America. There is a small exemption for very small farms, but that exemption is full of holes and pretty leaky. It's not very solid. So now we have the FDA, who's used to dealing with a manufacturing environment, and now they're going to try and do farms. The last FDA inspector that came to our farm had only done medical devices his whole career. He had never inspected a farm. He was not trained in any way to inspect a farm, and there he was inspecting our farm. He was a nice fella, and I can't say the FDA doesn't somehow have the legal authority to be there, but you would think he would have a little training before he got to the farm environment.
So, again, is it about food safety, or is it about controlling what we eat to the extent that only those interests who comply with the government's wishes will be allowed to produce the food that we eat? Will it be that only dead food is good food? Is that where we're headed, folks? Right back with a concluding thoughts after this important message, so please do stay tuned. Michael Olson with Ken Kimes on The Food Chain. Well, folks, we have a few minutes and so much to talk about here on The Food Chain with Michael Olson and guest Ken Kimes from New Natives, a sprout grower, 30 years growing sprouts, selling them directly to people, like my wife, Marlene, who absolutely insists that whenever we go to the farmer's market, we go for sprouts. Why? Because it's a living food. It is a real food. It is food with super concentrations of nutrients, and it's easy to digest. And it can even make the dead foods that you buy in packages come to life, which is no small feat. And today we're talking about the impact of government on our food safety and the new laws being passed, the Food Safety Modernization Act, which in effect gives the federal government total control of our food chain. We now live in a totalitarian state when it comes to food, because the FDA now controls the whole kit and caboodle from very top to very bottom. So how is the federal government going to act with respect to all of the people who grow food directly for us, the farmers of the farmers markets of the United States, which are, 10,000 farmers markets in the United States? They're everywhere, 750 of them here in California alone. People like Ken Kimes growing food directly and selling directly to people like you and I. Will the federal government allow them to continue in business? Is food safety the means by which government will gain control over what we may or may not eat? Will the government allow us to eat fresh foods? Ken, where do you think this is headed? I mean, well, you see the the impact of the federal government's efforts to get control here.
Well, I've got to say that the whole food, we do a whole food safety program on our farm. We have 15 pieces of paper we fill out every morning. Certain things have to happen and be in place or we just don't start production. It's a constant on our farm. We do trainings around it. We do a lot of different things around it. And I have to say that it's a really hard thing with a lot of resource requirements to keep up. And it's really tough when you're a small farmer and you're trying to basically you're a laborer on your own farm. Small farmers just don't have a lot of extra time, especially in the thick of the season, to pay attention to food safety matters. But that's what they're going to be required to do.
Mm-hmm. And yet food safety is always on their mind because you have to sell directly to your customers.
Well, yeah, you're not gonna sell them unsafe food. Plus, you don't have processes that are remote from you as the owner. In other words, you're there with the produce right straight through the cycle. It's not some big factory off somewhere else turning out the thing, and you're in the corporate boardroom in New York when the factory is somewhere in Argentina or something like that. You're right there with the food. You see it going out. You're not going to go to the farmer's market with crappy produce, things that are going off and are not fresh. So you're really with the thick of that produce. An example is that, you know, a large processing facility will have a metal detector, let's say. Well, the food safety people recognize that because we look at every single piece of produce that we sell, and that's a lot of sprouts to look at, we are the control point for metal contamination. We actually see everything that goes by us. Somebody looks at every single piece of produce that goes by. So we're the quality control in that card. That doesn't mean we can see pathogenic bacteria, but we can certainly see dangerous situations when they occur and control for them rapidly.
So to me, all of these food contamination incidents occur on giant operations where the operation gets so big that you can't really control it. And then what happens is that those people who are very big use those crises to go after their competition, people like Ken Kimes here. And that, folks, is what boils my blood, because I love real food from real people. I want to thank Ken Kimes from New Natives Farms for joining us today and newnatives.com. What do you think out there? Is food safety the means by which government will control what we may or may not eat? And if so, what kinds of food will government allow us to eat? On the forum page at metrofarm.com, thank you all for tuning in. Stay tuned next week for more Food with Its Farmer's Face on It.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.